Hello, Solo Mom. Welcome or welcome back. I really appreciate you allowing me to be your host and mentor. On this International Podcast Day, I'm also grateful for the opportunity podcasting has afforded me to meet and talk with moms across the globe. I also hope today's interview with widowed mom Debbie Weiss gives you perspective on your own life as she shares her story with us. In this battle, it's hard to keep your head above the water. So win this fight. My guest today is Debbie Weiss. Welcome, Debbie. Thank you for coming and talking to us on Solo Moms Talk.
Thank you so much. I'm thrilled to be here.
Yes, absolutely. Before we get into what you do, could you tell us, who is Debbie Weiss?
Boy, that's a loaded question. So I have been a family caregiver to three different family members for over 40 years. And around the age of 50, I kind of had a wake-up call and realized I needed to take care of myself too. And I've been on a journey for about 12 years now.
Right. So you were taking care of someone and then decide, well, maybe I need to take care. Isn't that something we neglect to notice? I'm going to say notice. As women, especially if we're moms, that everybody is a priority except us.
Exactly.
So what was the defining moment? Did something happen to give you that aha moment?
It did. And I don't think that I realized just how aha it was in the moment. My dad, when I was 17, had a massive stroke. He was only 45, but he survived, became permanently disabled. My parents were divorced, and so he was my responsibility. And in the beginning, you know, I was thrilled to be able to help him. And of course, I always wanted to help him, and I'm not saying that that's not the case. But over time, you know, then when I did have my kids, and I also have a business, and, you know, my husband, and all of the people, you know, I just was always stressed. I was always, you know, if you said hello to me in a funny way, I would explode, and it made no sense because it was just building up from not taking any time for myself, right? Feeling that it was selfish and I didn't have time because I had to take care of my father and my kids and my business and all the things. And when I turned 50, my friends insisted that we go away for a weekend. And I thought, how am I going to leave my family? And my dad had actually passed away about a year earlier. But I went. And on that weekend, literally from the minute that we met at the airport, we went to Bermuda for two nights. We just started laughing, And I, through that whole trip, you know, they would turn to me and say, what do you want to do? And it was almost like I was looking over my shoulder, right? Like, you're asking me what I want to do? I don't even know the answer. And one night at dinner, we were having a discussion of, you know, what are our hopes and dreams? And I had a lot of hopes and dreams for my kids, but none for me. It felt like me, you know, my life, this is it, right?
Yeah.
And coming home from that and just seeing what it felt like to just take 2 days that were really all for myself and one more thing for me, something about the number 50 really made me stop and look at my mortality. And I thought, I don't want to be that person who gets to the end of their lives and looks back with regrets. And I don't mean I don't have any regrets for taking care of my father and my kids. One of my kids has special needs, and eventually I took care of my husband. I don't have any regrets.
Right.
Just because we're taking care of everyone else doesn't mean that we don't deserve to take care of ourselves.
Right.
And that's what changed for me. So it was that Bermuda trip that did it.
Wow, that's amazing. There is something about 50. One, it was my turning point as well. I took a vacation for the first time. I walked into my boss's office and I'm saying, I'm taking the week off. And he goes, okay, go ahead. Because I'd never taken a vacation at 50. And the second thing is that we neglect our own dreams and desires, and we may not recognize it, but it does build up some form of negative thing in us until we do what you did and get away and, you know, focus on you, right?
Yeah, for sure. I just felt, you know, this is, of course, you know, I wanted to have a family. I went through a lot to have my own kids. I, you know, had 6 IVF cycles. You know, I love them more than anything. But at the end of the day, what happens? You know, we do our job as parents, and eventually, hopefully, they go off and live productive lives and be good adults. And where are you left?
Right.
Kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I often say, you know, everyone has their own path. It doesn't matter who you're with or what your responsibilities are. You have a personal path, because whether you believe it or not, scripture says we all have to give an account of our own actions, regardless of outside forces, right?
Yep.
So, yeah, of course. So are you a solo mom?
I am.
Okay.
I am. I've been through, I couldn't figure out, you know, I knew I wanted to do something to help women who were like me. Mm-hmm. You know, I figured, I think I'm fairly halfway intelligent, that it was like I had a revelation. So I think there must be other women out there who are kind of like I was, you know, head down, not thinking mm-hmm. about anything but the to-do list for today and everybody's appointments and where you have to drive people and all those things.
Yeah.
But I didn't know, how do I get to those people, right?
Right.
And so I've over the last, let's say, 5 years or so, kind of just been figuring it out and enjoying every second of it.
Yeah, that's good. Now, you mentioned IVF.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something you want to talk about?
Oh, sure.
If you could talk about in the context of if someone is struggling with that right now. So you talk about your own struggles if you
sure.
as much as you want to.
Sure.
And let us know about it.
Okay. So I got married when I was 30. My husband was 36. I have an insurance agency, and he and I kind of started it together, but it is my agency. And so we did it right kind of when we got married. And so I wasn't able to start trying to have children maybe until I was, I don't know, 33 or 34. And we were unsuccessful and went to the gynecologist and, you know, they start you on, I can't even think of the name of the medication, and that didn't work, and did things, you know, artificial insemination in his office. And after about a year, which was very frustrating, he sent us to a fertility doctor. And at the same time, I was having, one, I was probably about, oh gosh, maybe 150 pounds overweight at that point in my life. I also was having issues with my back, and I found out that I needed to have a spinal fusion. And so the fertility doctor said, don't even bother coming to me because you have to get that taken care of first. So that made it like another year, you know. And, you know, mm-hmm. as everybody else around you is pregnant, and now, you know, I'm like 35, my husband is 41, and, you know, my friends' kids are in high school practically, you know, it just got more and more frustrating. It seemed like every barrier, you know, there continually was a barrier. Mm-hmm. And in the end, when we did go and we had the testing, it turned out that even though, yeah, there was a little issue with my husband's sperm, that was not the main problem. It was that my eggs were prematurely aged. So let's say I was 35, but I had the quality eggs of, you know, I don't remember, let's just say a 45-year-old. And because of that, and again, this was, you know, like 25 years ago. So technology today is much different than it was. Back then, when they took the eggs, now they test the quality, they can test everything. Then you couldn't. Mm-hmm. So it was very, very difficult. I had two IVFs where I had four, they're not embryos, but transferred back, and I did not get pregnant. And then the third time I hit it lucky and got pregnant and had my oldest son. And then 6 months later, I went back to try for number two. And just in that time frame, the situation was much worse. And so one of the issues when your eggs are you know, old, basically, is that even with the medication that they give you, I was not producing a lot of eggs to even have them, you know, try. And so I did it once and I didn't get pregnant. The second time, I didn't even have enough eggs to have them have the retrieval. There was like a minimum back then of like four, and I did not have that. And so at that point, it was very important for me to have a second child one way or another. My oldest child was not hitting his, you know, milestones, not all of the milestones. And at this time, we started taking him for testing based on what the pediatrician advised. And I wanted him to have a sibling. So anyway, I was, you know, the doctor said, look, there's really not much I can do. I will do it one more time. I will give you the maximum dosage of medicine. He did that. There was enough for the retrieval. But the day of the transfer back, there was only one viable embryo. And I started talking to my husband about adoption, about donor eggs, you know, because I wasn't letting it go. Like that's kind of me, on to the next thing. And that embryo's name is Ben. Yeah.
You're a miracle.
he is definitely, definitely a miracle. Yes.
That's awesome. Well, thank you for sharing. I know that's deeply personal, but you know, nothing we go through, we are unique. Someone else is either going through it or have been through in some way, shape or form the same experience. So I appreciate you sharing that. So, you know.
Very, very difficult experience.
Very, very, very difficult. I imagine. And yeah. There's some who don't want theirs, but anyway,
yeah,
that's another conversation.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. So before we go on, before I start picking your brain again, okay. tell us what you do for your clients. I see you have two books, mm-hmm. On Second Thought and The Sprinkle Effect. You could talk about those as well, what you do for your clients and how we can get in touch with you.
Sure. So I have written two books, as you said. The first is On Second Thought, Maybe I Can. Mm-hmm. It's my memoir. I actually wrote it, not wanting to do it this way, but mm-hmm. wrote it as my husband was dying. Mm-hmm. And so it was therapeutic in a way to have something mm-hmm. else to focus on. He had received a terminal blood cancer diagnosis and died 6 months later. Mm. And it was just at the point that I was considering writing a book and wasn't going to do it once he got that diagnosis because, you know, obviously my life was turned upside down. I didn't know what the future looked like. And a therapist advised me. I said, well, I did it by taking a course, or not a course, like a small group coaching program, because I had never had a desire to write anything, didn't know if I could, but took the leap of faith. And the therapist said, I think this is actually a good time for you to do it because you'll need something of your own during this difficult period. And she yes. was right. So it is just a memoir, meaning it's, you know, there's no advice. It's just some of my life and the story and the transformation. And after that was published, everyone said, well, how did you change? What did you do after you turned 50? And that's where the second book comes into play. It's called The Sprinkle Effect. And the idea is that sprinkling in just different things into your life makes the change. It's not one big thing. So its chapters are like a sprinkle of perspective, of mindset, belief, action, discipline, joy, curiosity, those kinds of things. And then there's an accompanying workbook. So actually, I sell my books and I also am a professional speaker.
Okay, awesome. Thank you. And if you could... Well, later I'll collect some links from you so we could put them in the show notes so we could go visit where you're speaking.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, my website is debbierweiss.com.
Okay, thank you. All right. Okay, awesome. So you've gone through a lot, yeah?
Yeah, haven't we all?
Yeah, you lost your husband and then the struggle with having your two sons. But tell a solo mom, right, who feel like they're constantly starting over, just always going through it. What mindset shift helped you rebuild?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that my mindset shift literally changed my life. I didn't realize it, but I had a victim mentality. I felt that everything was happening to me. You know, it felt like one thing after another. And of course, this is even before social media. I'd be comparing myself to, you know, my neighbors, my friends, the people I work with. And it seemed like their life was easy compared to mine. Mine just seemed like, boom, one thing after another kept hitting me.
Yeah.
And so even though I was happy on the outside, you know, it wasn't like I was ever a negative person, but inside I did feel put upon. And why me? You know, my oldest son, when he was two, was diagnosed on the autism spectrum. And then he added other diagnoses. So that, you know, was and continues to be a tough thing.
Yeah.
So when I started going through my journey after 50, I realized that it was all in the way I was looking at things, and that we all go through struggles. Some might be harder than others. There's a bazillion people out there who've been through worse things than I have, and people who have easier, and it, you know, all of it doesn't matter. The fact is, I was not taking any responsibility for my life. I was blaming all these outside forces, all these things that were happening to me. And I was kind of letting myself off the hook by saying, well, what am I supposed to do?
Right.
You know, and just listing all these horrible things and, you know, how busy I was. But I was really lying to myself. And so I think you have to take a real, honest, hard look at the stories that you're telling yourself.
Yes.
Because if you want to do something, if I could write a book while my husband was dying and I had the responsibility of my business as well, I don't know. I just feel like there's always, even if it's 5 minutes a day of doing something for your business, doing something, whatever feeds your soul, like you can always figure out a way to find that.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, thank you. It does take that shift in mindset, though, and that's the crux of the matter, isn't it?
It is. It's hard.
Yeah. Okay. All right. You talk about, in the sprinkly effect, adding joy back into your life through small steps. And of course, the mindset shift is probably the starting point of that. For solo moms juggling many responsibility, what are a few simple sprinkles they can add to make life feel lighter and more fulfilled?
So one of the things that really changed things for me was something I did not believe in at first, But, well, let me just tell you, and that is a gratitude practice. You know, people would talk about it. Everybody would talk about it online. Some groups I was in, oh, let's say what we're grateful for. And I thought, this is dumb. I mean, I really did. I thought it was a waste of time. What am I supposed to say? Every day I'm going to say I'm grateful for my kids. I'm grateful for my job. You know, what is the point of this? And then someone sent me a gratitude journal as a gift. And I was annoyed because now I have to try it because she gave it to me as a gift and she's going to ask me how I like it. And I appreciate her thinking of me. Yeah. So I'll try it. And it had different prompts, you know, different questions that you would answer. Mm-hmm. And pretty much every day my answers were the same. And one day I was walking my dog, as I always do. And instead of having my face in my phone or talking on the phone or whatever it was, something made me look up and I noticed how blue the sky was. And I thought, oh, wow, I'm grateful for that blue sky. That's something I can put in my gratitude journal. And I did. And what I found was, is that just by doing this practice, it was almost like, it wasn't like I was walking around all day looking around saying, what can I be grateful for? But because it was in my mind, I started noticing things. I started appreciating when I went into the pharmacy to pick up my medication and I talked to that same person, you know, every week or whatever it is, how often, you know, a little chit chat. I'm like, you know, I enjoy talking to her. That brightened my day. Mm-hmm. And when you do this, you start to realize and be present for those little things all throughout our day that we do have to be grateful for. And something like that really doesn't take time. It can be, you know, waking up or going to bed first thing or, you know, last thing and just thinking about three things that you're grateful for. For me, just writing it down is just a little more, I don't know, having something that reminds me to do it, you know, putting the gratitude journal or the notebook, you don't need a gratitude journal, on your table or wherever you are. For me, I like it first thing in the morning to remind me to do it. And, you know, you start to realize that there is joy built into your day, even if it's busy, even if a lot of crummy things are going on in your life. And, you know, a lot of times it just takes, unfortunately, just last Friday had a 60-year-old friend pass away. And, you know, it makes you realize, what the heck am I complaining about? You know, so sometimes you just need to put things in perspective. And I think that that helps. The other thing I'd say is take the time to make a list of all the little things that bring you joy, right? For me, you know, most people, women would say, oh, a cup of tea, you know, or not me. I get a McDonald's Diet Coke every morning, no matter what. That is my go-to. I quit smoking like 30-something years ago, and that's when I started this habit. It's bad for you. I know, don't say anything. But for me, that brings me joy. It's little, but when I don't have it, I can't stand it.
Yes.
And when I get it, just that little sip, every single day, I'm like, it makes me so happy. So, you know, start to make a list of those little things. Start to think about what did you do as a kid that you enjoyed? And how can you make that happen now as an adult? It takes effort. You know, it does take effort. Nothing's going to happen and just suddenly appear. You have to make it happen. But anyone can.
Yeah, it's true that. True that. Mm. Thank you very much, Debbie Wise, for coming and speaking to us today. And on that note, I'm going to ask my usual question. What is Debbie grateful for today?
Oh, my goodness. See, that's a nice segue.
Yes.
Well, I'm grateful for this opportunity to meet you and to speak to your audience, for sure. I'm glad we connected.
Amen. Yes. Oh, thank you.
That's it. I can come up with a lot of other things.
Yes, I'm sure. And I'm grateful for this opportunity and that podcasting gives us to connect with people we probably would never normally cross paths with. So, yes, I am grateful for this too. Thank you, Debbie Wise, for coming and talking to us on Solo Moms Talk. Really appreciate you. Any parting shots?
I will leave you with my favorite quote, which is from Glinda the Good Witch in The Wizard of Oz, who said, "You've always had the power, my dear. You just had to learn it for yourself." And aww. I always thought whenever I heard that, that just meant, Dorothy, click your heels and say, there's no place like home. You could have gotten there in the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
But it means so much more. And I think we have to realize we all have the power within us. We just have to realize that we do and learn how to use it.
Yes. Amen. Thank you.
Thank you.